Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
This is Dmitry Samarov from Chicago, Illinois. And I love listening to Vish Khanna's Creative Control because whether he's talking to a favorite musician or actor of mine or someone I've never heard of, it's as if he's introducing me to a new friend. And the way things are going, couldn't you use a new friend? Listen now.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Brendan Canty, Joe Lally, James Brandon Lewis, and Anthony Pirog are each virtuoso musicians who hail from the United States of America. Since releasing their powerful self-titled debut as The Mesthetics in 2018, Canty, Lally, and Pirog have written music and toured together at a tremendous clip. After befriending and collaborating with the remarkable guitarist Pirog, Lewis, a well-respected saxophonist, began jamming with The Mesthetics and invited them to record the song Fear Not for his 2022 album, Eye of I, which is available on Anti Records. The relationship is so strong, it's brought us a full and tremendous collaborative self-titled album by The Mesthetics and James Brandon Lewis, which is widely available on March 15th, 2024, via the illustrious label Impulse Records. As such, Brendan, Joe, Anthony, and James all join me for a great talk about what it means for a musician to sat in with other musicians. composition, improvisation, freedom, and defying genre signifiers, the pros and cons of music school, how Anthony and James first linked up, and how the Misthetics began working with James, cultivating your own musical voice, and what makes Brendan on drums and Joe on bass such a remarkable rhythm section, upcoming tour and festival dates, other future plans, and much more. Part of the Entertainment One Network, with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this donor-driven podcast and spread the word about it, and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary and most reliable way for podcasters like me to make a living. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a well-stocked record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and a great website, blackbird.ca, where you can order records and they'll ship them right to your house. Say you want to order the new Misthetics and James Brandon Lewis album. Again, go to blackbird.ca, type it in, see if they can't get it for you. I bet they can. Plus in-kind support from the likes of Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 845 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Brendan, Joe, and Anthony from the Misthetics, and James Brandon Lewis, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hello, Misthetics and James, are you there?
Yes.
Hello. Hello, Beast.
Great to be here.
We're here.
Thank you.
A cacophonous hello. It's nice to see you all and hear from you. Thank you for making time for me. Let's start over here. Brendan, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Vish?
I'm well. It's nice to see you again. And where in the world are you today?
I'm in my living room, where I am 98% of the time. Thank you for asking.
Is that still D.C. these days?
Yeah, still Washington, D.C., Upper Northwest, Wakefield, Tenley Town. Yeah, North Cleveland Park. You can call it what you want. I've been here most of my life.
I appreciate the GPS specificity of your response. No, it's lovely to see you as always, Brendan. Thank you for making time and helping organize this momentous conversation. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Joe, are you there?
Yes, I am. How you doing, Vish? This is the sound of my voice, and I am farther east of Brendan in Northwest, Washington, D.C.
Nice. It's you're staying put. I think of you, Joe, as someone who will live all over the world if you can, but you're staying put in D.C. these days.
It seems so, yes.
Nice, nice. And things are good generally?
Yes, things are good, and very happy that we're getting out to play.
Yeah, very nice. Also on the call, because he's been on the show before, I'm going to everyone I'm most familiar with, so if I haven't called upon you yet, don't be offended. Anthony, are you there?
Hello, yes, I'm here.
Nice to see you again, sir. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. It's nice to see you, too.
And where are you today?
I am in Silver Spring, Maryland. I'm a mile away from the D.C. border, so.
Nice. How long have you been there?
That's where. 2.5 years.
Oh, okay. The last time you were on, were you living in D.C.? Is that right?
Yeah, we were at the time, but we moved during the COVID stuff.
Oh, okay.
Landed in Silver Spring.
Maryland, I've a lot of Maryland conversation on the show lately. It seems like people are, it's the hip place to be is what I'm getting at. Is that true?
Oh, is it? I don't know. Thanks for telling me. I appreciate it.
Have you noticed the market, the houses are going up? Have you noticed there's more coffee shops, that kind of thing?
No, I haven't, but I don't really leave my house. So, like Brendan, I'm in my music room 98% of the time.
Okay, well, it's lovely to see you again, and can't wait to talk about this project. And last but not least, of course, James, are you there?
Yeah, what's happening, Vish?
Oh, not too much, thank you. Thank you so much for making time. Where in the world are you?
I'm in Brooklyn, Sunset Park.
Nice, yeah. How long have you been there?
Well, I've lived in the New York City area for 12 years. Yeah.
Okay. And you did spend some time in D.C. for schooling, is that correct?
Yeah, that was a while ago, though. That's like 2002 to 06.
You said that like you disown the period in your life that you spent time in D.C. Is it not a fond memory in some way?
No, I had fun in D.C. But it was undergrad. It was a totally different situation, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, college is kind of, undergrad is, it could be hit or miss. It was some good times, it was some okay times, you know? It's cool.
You feel, that's fair about most aspects of my life. I'll say that right now. Every era I can think of, hit or miss. did you study music at school?
Yeah, yeah. I was in the jazz studies program at Howard University.
Nice. Yeah. Well, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome to the show. You're the guest who's been on for the first time. So thank you for this. And congratulations to all of you on this wonderful new record. It really is, you know, it brings me back to my days in Guelph when I was on the board of the Guelph Jazz Festival and would attend that festival all the time. And I miss it dearly. I was playing it in the house and my wife's like, huh, this brings me back too. Like we were just brought back to that time where we would see really exciting music of this ilk. So it's moving me on many levels. Anthony, I understand on some level this union between the Misthetics and James, you had a heavy hand in this. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, James and I, we were talking about this recently. We've known each other for 10 years now. That's right, James, right?
That is correct.
Yeah. So we met in New York in Manhattan at a recording session that the drummer William Hooker put together. Luke Stewart and John Arabagon were also taking part. And, I had met everyone except for James, right, before the session. And happened very quickly. I mean, we just played for the amount of time the length of the record is. And after we played, James and I just started talking and we went out and got something to eat and just really hit it off and stayed in touch from there. And, you know, James was very generous with me in his groups and asked me to perform with him and tour with him and record. When it came time and we were asked to play at Winter Jazz Fest, I suggested that we all play together.
Just like that.
I believe that's what happened. That's my memory. And it was just great. So,
and that was when was that? 5 years ago?
2019. January.
Yeah. Okay, cool. James, do you dispute anything Anthony just said? Does it seem accurate to you in your memory?
Yeah, no, that's the correct timeline. Yeah. For sure. I concur.
Oh, good.
In terms of the collaboration with Anthony, what did it sort of open you up to yourself, James? I mean, it seems to me you play with lots of different people. Obviously, something resonated with you about this playing and this relationship. Can you articulate what that was?
Yeah, I think Anthony is like probably the primary guitarist that I've worked with. Our sounds just fit. They just gel. I think we have a similar melodic sense, you know, like our feel for melody is the same. And sometimes when he composes stuff, even if I'm not involved in the project, we share work with each other. And I'm like, wow, that sounds like something I would come up with. And vice versa. Like he'll listen to something I come up with and say, so we've always gelled in that sense. And, you know, when you find a connection with someone musically, especially when your sounds fit inside each other, you know, you kind of don't want to abandon that.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough.
So, yeah.
Brandon, how often have the Misthetics played with people outside of the core trio?
Just a few times, you know, I mean, yeah. And just sitting in for a couple songs, like up in Chicago, we did something with Ken Vandermark. But we actually, James, previous to doing this recording, was the most sat in person. Isn't that the official? Isn't that the phrase? Isn't that what we're?
I think that's the right terminology.
He was the most sat in person in the Misthetics.
He's
satiny. Is that what you're saying? His playing is satiny and smooth. Is that what we're getting at? Maybe.
I think just about. I mean, I don't remember. Maybe there was one show up in New York we played that you didn't sit in on, but it was but all the other ones,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Bell House and Union Pool. You weren't at the first one, and every time James,
I think Bell House was twice,
yeah,
right?
I think that's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And every time it's just elevated the show, you know. I mean, I think this was a record that wanted to be made for a few years, to be honest with you, you know. And so it really was just kind of getting around to getting through COVID and getting back in the same city and then getting a bunch of music together and then working the music towards James being involved, you know, making space for him and communicating with him sending stuff to us and working stuff up. So that whole process was, you know, we had him in mind for all the writing and also, and then when he got together for the rehearsals for the record, he just brought in melody upon melody and, you know, we built and built on top of it. So it came together pretty quickly, honestly. Nice. Once we thought, oh, we're going to make it with James, it started to really make the record gel.
So, Joe, in your recollection of the sitting in or the sat in, I don't know what the correct tense of the word should be, but
sat in.
Yeah, I think we're teaching English to people as they listen to this show. That's how this is going to work. Joe, in your recollection
of
It's a Canadian show. Expanding our vocabularies every day. That's what we do here up in Canada. Joe, as you recall these moments where James joined you, were they primarily improvisations or were you the Mesthetics laying a foundation for him to play over kind of thing?
I guess both of those things, inviting him up to play on songs were, you know, that songs we had already been playing for a while, I guess. And so maybe Anthony might introduce him to a melody. I don't know. I don't know, pay attention to all that stuff, but I bet he could. And then James can just read that thing so fast that he suddenly is totally on top of a song that I'm still trying to get together. No, that's the way it was in the studio. Literally, I'd look over at James and go like, wait a minute, he already knows what's about to happen. I'm still trying to make sure I get this right.
Okay.
But no, the live shows were definitely such a pleasure and got better each time. I mean, they were never bad, but we just kept feeling them increasing in stock, in value for us as a band. And I think it sort of reached a point where it was normal to think about him being a part of the next record.
Yeah.
And it was kind of awesome for things to open up that way, for there to be two soloists and in some ways easier to compose, to say like, oh, those really good musicians will play something during these areas. And so it was easier to put the music together. And it really did work out that way. So it was great all around.
Brandon, Joe's being a little, I think, facetious, of course, about your own abilities. You guys know I think of you as like, you know, one of the best rhythm sections of all time. But I understand the modesty. But within that, when you bring in someone who maybe is outside of your genre realm, if you will, and who's a sophisticated musician, Brandon, does it give you and Joe at least some pause of like, holy shit, we're playing with some hot shots here. What are we going to do? Do you have that sort of...
I feel like a super fraud, but I'm just... If you don't mention it, nobody will notice. So, you know, I'm just trying to shut up about it, say all the right things, and keep these guys happy. No, I mean, honestly, playing with Anthony was immediately like that already. I mean, for years, I've been like, you know, like, look what he's doing. He's doing all this amazing shit. What the fuck? You know, like blowing my mind every night completely, the writing and the playing live and being in the moment and all that stuff. And so, and James is right, you know, like the way that these two guys play together, especially live, when they're playing, like just playing the melody together, their sounds really complement each other. You know, Anthony knows, you know, where to, you know, how to fit together, but they play right on top of each other in such a beautiful way. And then the soloing has so much, I mean, they just push each other. It's like you put two horses next to each other and they start to race, you know, like that's just what it's like. To me, that's what it feels like. And so it's super exciting to watch live. And James, you know, we haven't had anybody who's worked with us that has felt as part of the family as James has. He's like really like super into pushing, elevating not just the bandstand, but the whole room. You know, everybody's getting jacked up during their gigs. You know, I don't know what we're going to do about our dB limits in France, man.
France.
That's some sort of lost in translation thing that I don't quite know. I'm just kidding.
No, they just don't. They don't. They in France they have decibel meters in every
place.
That's
true.
I'm just pointing out that we're a little louder than we. It gets loud.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no,
it's not all loud, but it is. But it is true. Yeah, but honestly, you know, it's a total. I feel really lucky to be playing with these guys.
You said
all
something.
Three of these guys. Joe too.
Yeah, Joe as well. We can't leave Joe out. It's a mistake to leave Joe out of the equation. You said something there that was interesting to me. You said you get excited watching them play live, James and Anthony, like you're not part of it. Like, do you feel a little objective even when you're on stage? Like
oh,
you're
yeah.
witnessing something?
No, I'm hearing it, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, yeah.
I
yeah.
mean, you know, which, you know, I have to respond to what they're playing,
yeah.
you know? That's the fun part, you know, is that yeah. dialogue that's happening.
Yeah.
So, and it changes by the second, you know?
I think we had a good laugh about this the last time, Brendan and Joe and Anthony and I, because Brendan said that Anthony does stuff and he doesn't understand it. And I found it kind of hilarious that you're like, oh, I wish he was less complicated. Well, I forget, it was something like that, right? Anthony,
I didn't say I wish he was less complicated.
It was something along
Wait,
those lines. I
did not say okay. that.
Well, we'll go to the tape. We'll go to the tape and we'll find it. I think there was something.
What the hell?
Vish is a mixer. He's a mixer.
Yeah, I see what's happening here.
I'm not trying to stir anything up. I'm just saying I remember that there was a great admiration for Anthony's playing from the Fugazi camp of this band is all I'm getting at. Anthony.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's all I'm getting at. Anthony, you seem to be bridging at least two potential worlds, if we may. Can you talk about this relationship in terms of just musical backgrounds and where you maybe fit as a bridge? Do you feel like a little bit of a bridge between two worlds here?
Not really, because I feel like I'm just playing with my friends.
Yeah,
And it's really just, I really don't even know how to respond to that because, I mean, we're just writing songs and working ideas out together. And we don't really have a mission. Like, we're gonna make something that sounds like this. We're just constantly coming up with ideas and developing them. And, I mean, I can see how maybe it looks like that. But for me, that's never... I've never felt like I'm, you know, doing anything specific. I really don't know because I don't see this like that or myself like that. So, and also, you know, we've all heard records for many years that kind of incorporate a lot of different influences.
And yeah,
we all listen to all kinds of music. So, I mean, to lean into an area, you know, a little bit. It's something I don't even think about. So sorry, I wish I had something more interesting to say.
No, that's fair. I was kind of riffing more on Joe's comment about like the good musicians will help us, you know, get through. I don't think that's true either. This seems like a social gathering for sure. Like this seems like friends playing music and it works very beautifully, if I might say.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, no, I don't see it like that ever. Yeah. I really don't even know what to say. I apologize.
Plus, we went to Japan, and once you're in Japan playing, you're just like, God, I guess our music isn't that crazy. You saw so many bands that we were like, what the hell? I just had a conversation with somebody about that, and that's probably why that came to mind. But it is that way. It's just that it's so natural. I mean, the thing about beginning to play with Anthony was like that. Anthony made it, you know, even if I did look at him as being like kind of beyond, you know, my powers or something, I mean, it definitely raised the level of things I felt were possible.
Yeah.
And he made us feel like that was totally legit. I mean, he ruined us. Now we just feel like we can do that. So whatever happens, we seem to think that we're capable of it all. So we can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and it goes back to kind of like what Brendan said, you know, getting excited to hear everyone. It's like when I first played with Joe and Brendan, it was very exciting because, I mean, immediately it's just the sound was so huge. And I knew I could do anything on top of it, basically, and it was going to be okay.
Yeah.
And it got me excited to play. The same thing happened when I played with James at the William Hooker session. I mean, his sound was just so exciting. I just wanted to be around it, you know, and work with him. So
I remember the first time James came into practice before the record, we hadn't practiced in a room together, in the practice room together, and his horn is the loudest thing in the room. I mean, really. I mean, it's in a beautiful way. I know that's going to sound like an insult, but it does. It's like he provides, the largeness of his horn provides a lot of cover for the rest of us, too. Like for me, it's like I say, okay, now I'm no longer the loudest guy in the room. So I can, you know, it allows you to raise it up, raise all the sound even more.
Yeah.
A little more,
yeah,
up, and it allows you to play a little more.
It's true. The sound of the saxophone is just so different than being with guitars and drums that it really did open up another way of viewing your own instrument and how it sat within everything else. This is very interesting. It's very, because it was very different. It's hard to explain how, but yeah, it was very different.
So James, you come into this configuration. It's already a pretty loud band. Can you sort of articulate your own experience playing with the Mesthetics? What does it bring out of you as a player and as a musician, and maybe even how it compares to other experiences you've had?
Yeah, sure. Well, first off, I don't really operate in the comparative. I take every situation in its singularity. First of all, because that just helps me deal with the situation. If I end up comparing, then I end up doing a thing that isn't the thing. You know, I need to be in the moment with, you know, appreciating the players and the ensemble. For me, it was natural. I mean, to be honest, because I wasn't trying to fit. I was just trying to be myself. I wasn't trying to fit a thing inside of a thing or like compartmentalize and think about everyone's individual background as, oh, this player is this, this player is this. It's more like thinking about how the group is sounding. I mean, that's what you hear on the record. You don't hear like me trying to play, you know, out of what the music is calling me to play, you know?
Yeah.
Like sometimes when you try to force something, I don't think any of this is force. You know, I mean, I think because of me and Anthony's history together, once Brendan and Joe, the four of us got together, it just felt like another extension of what, of the communication me and Anthony we already had together. So, and I think, I mean, while I appreciate these notions of, you know, what's good or musicianship or this, man, we just trying to play some music and make sure it's, you know, make sure it's on point.
Yeah.
And I think these categories kind of get on my nerves. It gets in the way of the music, you know? Like, I approach every situation respectfully. And, you know, prior to even Anthony asking me to play with the Mesthetics at Winter Jazz, you know, I had already did my due diligence by, you know, looking up the history of Brendan and Joe and kind of like, you know, putting my ear to, like, not everything they've done, because they've done a lot, but at least coming into the situation like, oh, okay, this is another color. This is another way to paint. You know, I don't, in that sense, I'm happy that my mind wasn't, I mean, this is no critique towards education, but I'm glad it didn't corrupt that side of me. You know, like I remember what I was like before I went to school, and music was just like getting together with your friends and having a good time. And so I feel like I'm back to that point, you know, like every time we get together and play, it just feels like, okay, yeah, this is what music is about. Before, you know, before my training, it was about, you know, the music and all that. So I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah, that's the mode. Well,
it does actually, because I was wondering how I alluded to your time in D.C.
Right.
For school. That would have, I'm guessing, been well after Fugazi stopped playing. I'm being presumptuous. Did you ever see the band or see Brendan and Joe play?
No, I never playing with them. No, I never. I was that mode of operation. You know, when you in school, and I was at Howard, it's very much like a conservatory. So I wasn't really doing. I mean, I did stuff outside of the school. Like I had little bands with my friends and stuff. We would do like R&B and soul gigs and jazz, like the neo soul vibe that was a thing. But outside of that, no, and I was a different person then, you know, I was, yeah. Was I 19? You know, I'm 40 now. Like I was 19, 20, 21. I had a particular vibe. Like I was trying to, what's Dexter Gordon doing? What's Wayne Shorter doing? Like I was, you know, I was like every other kid that goes to school for jazz. Like, yeah. You know? So, yeah.
So I'm just curious, because I think we're kind of circumnavigating the notion of music that's supposed to be free, but then even in that freedom, orthodoxies kind of develop, like expectations kind of develop, and it can be really constricting. And I mean, I got to see Fugazi play several times, and I've seen some amazing heroes in terms of jazz musicians. William Parker used to come to Guelph all the time, Matthew Shipp, these sorts of folks, and all of that reoriented my notion of what music could be, what freedom actually was. So it seems to me, I don't know, Brendan, if this resonates with you, that notion of freedom, like this project, the one we're talking about today, it could be anything. This is just, this record is just what happened to be captured in this. It sounds like it was a 2-day session. Is that your kind of mindset with the aesthetics, Brendan? Like this can be anything at this point.
I mean, I think it's always been like that. I mean, all the records have all sorts of music on them, you know, have like big, long atmospheric pieces. It's really just whatever. I mean, you can't write the same thing over and over again. And also if you have a band, you kind of want to see what it can do. Yeah. You know, I mean, the main thing is like, you just always have to keep searching out there for something that turns you on, you know? So yeah, in that way, I feel like we have this band and as you know, especially like I keep thinking, like, you know, we're going to be out on the road for a couple of months and we might be able to bring some new stuff into this mix a little bit, you know, not just the record, but keep going forward with it. And we have like lots of opportunities to do that. So we'll see how, you know, what happens live and up until that point. But we're always, I'm telling you, we get together twice a week for a couple hours at a time and we write all the time, and we are writing new. It's like, okay, got it, okay, move on, you know, blah blah blah, okay, tape it, move on. We just have like, we must have hundreds of pieces of music that we just kind of, because the band works like that. It's like we just start playing. Yeah. You know, and I wish every time James could be there with us in the room, because it would be that much better. Yeah. Man, we would have you know, it's been, but and also to that point, I've been thinking about this, because we're able to play with this band like you know, Primavera, we're playing Primavera, we're playing the Vancouver Jazz Festival, we're playing the Winnipeg Folk Festival and Hills. I mean, we're getting asked to play some really diverse gigs, which is making me really, really happy. Yeah. You know, like it's just music, and all the people who like music seem to like it, and that makes me happy. You know,
yeah.
It's like, because the categories don't make it, never made any sense to anybody. You know,
yeah.
Now there's a, you know, there's a museum of punk. You know, and now there's going to be, is there going to be a museum of post punk? Is there going to be a museum of, you know, like this, when does it, I don't know, the genres, we've lived through so many genres. It's like, it's all, genres are dead, man.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And I agree. And I think what I'm getting at is most of the experiences I've had have kind of illuminated that for me. The music that excites me the most doesn't fit in any genre. And I think that's more commonplace now, but it's been a gradual sort of progression in that regard. Joe, here's a potentially weird question, as all of my questions tend to be. I'm curious about, I'm a little odd. There's no doubt about it. I live in Edmonton, for crying out loud. There's snow and fire all the time. It's crazy. But my point is this, you know, as an artist, as a creative person, on some level, you do things to fulfill yourself. I get the impression from you that you really appreciate the challenge. So when we're joking around about Anthony or James pushing your limitations, that's what you maybe want as a musician, as an artist, don't you think? To be kind of pushed out of your comfort zone? Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I really always felt that way from the beginning. Part of my attitude is probably because all of that time I played in Fugazi, I really couldn't talk about what I was doing in any technical way at all. There was four strings, four dots, songs took place around them, you know. And at the same time, it was sort of this idea of what would be the right word. It's like the philosophy about the songs, about song making, was intact. Like I could, when I picked up an instrument, it's because that somehow finally had landed. Of all the years I'd been listening pretty seriously since about 9 or 10 to music, it just suddenly made sense. So yeah, to be able to push forward in what it would be was always a big part of it, for sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what's really fun about this record and what we can do going out to play is that it just, it's like James said, there is no, there's nothing forced about it at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's something I almost said before, because it's that's kind of been the amazing part about it, which makes it so smooth, you know, from the first time we got together and then and through the recording. There's never been a point where we were like, why did that happen? Or why was that played? That is not, that's like not part of the vocabulary of the four of us.
Yeah.
It's like, we're always like being propelled forward.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for listening to Creative Control. As always, as you may have heard me mention, I recently lost my day job and I've had a few conversations with people since who've said, you had a day job? I thought your podcast was your day job. When I explained why it hasn't been my day job to a friend, he suggested I should share some of this information with people like you listening right now. So, in short, unless they have some giant exclusive $1 million contract, podcasters are not paid to make stuff by companies like Apple and Spotify. Podcasters do not make any money from streaming royalties. Ad revenue is dependent on a certain threshold of downloads each month, and even if your show is accessed 30,000 times a month, the income you get is actually really minimal. So podcasters like me usually make time in our lives to support our communities and our interests to make these shows, and our most reliable source of income for this work is, in fact, crowdfunding. In my case, it's my Patreon. So if you'd like to receive ad-free episodes earlier than everyone else, regular newsletters and blog posts, bonus audio content, and support my work, quite literally, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Anthony, Brendan alluded to the fact that in the practice space, it's sadly not always possible for James to be there. Can we delve into a little bit of the compositional approach to the Misthetics these days? Literally, like when you guys walk into a room, is it some mix of someone saying, I got a couple ideas, or are you just playing and seeing what happens? Anthony, can you speak to that relationship between composition and improvisation in the practice space?
Why don't you just tell them about the last practice we had?
If I could remember it at all, I mean,
the sheet music that you brought in. Just describe what that with.
He brought. That's the one.
He brought in a piece of music that was so fucked up.
I think Joe was just showing us a visual.
Thank you for taking the crash off, Brendan, and giving me some focus. Yeah, so that was an experiment where Yeah, Brendan was playing in 7, I'm playing in 5, Joe's playing in 3, and then we were landing every 2 bars, and I was just like, don't listen to Joe.
Sounds like I don't even need to be there. What?
No, you're going to be
playing.
Saying,
with all
13.
That going on, I'm good. I'm good on that. You don't have to invite me.
You're well, gonna, PDF is on its way, James. PDF is on its way.
You're going to sat out on that one.
Yeah, exactly.
It goes both ways. You can sat in, you can sat out. So I understand. Okay.
So, yeah, that was an extreme example. But,
it's a lot going on. It's a lot going on that chart, Anthony. Okay.
Yeah, it's one page though. You know, you gave me one page. Oh, oh. I go to the entire record, not one page. But usually we'll just start with a jam. Like I'll finish plugging my pedals in, and then Brendan and Joe will start playing, and we'll just ease into something. And it'll either just be a little warm up thing, or we'll something we could grasp and grab onto and develop a little bit. But sometimes I'll bring in an idea. Joe has tons of bass lines and ideas, and I mean, Railroad Tracks Home, right, Joe? You wrote that one for the new record.
And Brendan.
Brendan also. Brendan has The Time Is the Place, came in with that. So everyone's bringing things in. We're developing them together. I think that the strength for meeting all the time is, one, with improvisation, we get to develop a group vocabulary, and then we can expand on that. And secondly, being able to arrange with other people is, I think, extremely valuable. Brendan and Joe are constantly having ideas for arrangements that I would not have, and or thoughts on a new section. And that's just great to, you know, be in an environment where it feels comfortable to try things out, you know, see if they work. And basically we do a little bit of everything.
Right.
That's the answer.
No, it's a good answer, Anthony. I feel like sometimes you're too hard on yourself about your great answers. They're good. They're really great, solid answers. I love your answers.
I really needed to hear that before.
I'm sorry. I gotta be better at gassing people up before we start. You're great. You're a fantastic interview subject. I love you. It's gonna be fine. I want to go back because we've talked about the chronology of this union. And James, I was not as familiar with your album Eye of I until recently. Oh, and yeah. So I was digging in, you know, I know it doesn't seem like it, but I try to do some research. Okay. And so I started to listen to some of your other stuff, and I see the Misthetics appear on this record in a collaboration. And so I don't think we've talked about that. And that, I believe, yeah, that would predate this album. Obviously, I know how time works.
Right.
Can you talk about how you got to the point where like, you know what, this is feeling so good, I'm going to invite these guys in. I want them on my record. Can we talk about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, that whole vibe was very interesting because in the process of making Eye of I, I think Anthony and I talked, and Anthony was telling me, oh, hey, we're going to be at Union Pool. And this was like sometime during the summer. And I was like, and at the time I wasn't lining up. I think I told him I couldn't do the gig. And then eventually it ended up working out where I was like, oh, you all are going to be in town. And then it was suggested to me by Auntie to record some singles. So I was like, oh, okay. And next thing you know, it was like, okay, Anthony, you're going to be in town when? When is the Union Pool gig? Okay, cool. Would y'all want to record? But Anthony and I had actually been playing Fear Not for maybe... It had never been recorded, but I had played it with a previous group. And so I was just like, okay, well, this is perfect. Let's just record it and get it done. Mm. And so we recorded it. I don't know. I think it was the day after the Union Pool gig or the day before. I can't remember.
The day before.
Yeah, the day before.
Yeah, the night before.
Yeah. And so it was just, and everybody was game and everybody was down. And I was like, you know, nobody was freaked out about it. I was just like, okay, yeah, that works, you know. And we kind of like collectively was just like, okay, yeah, this works. Put this part here, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, so that's how that came together.
Okay. Now, because it seems to me to be a seed to making a full-length record together, I'm just going to ask for impressions about that session. Joe, what did you make of that session? And, you know, how did it feel at the time?
I think literally, I think Anthony told us about it at practice the day before. I think it might have got mentioned before that, but then the day before it was kind of like, you know, okay, so we're going to go up and do this, and he'll show us the song when we get there. So there's a little bit of maybe we should know how the song goes kind of thing, you know, which would always help. But it was very straightforward, so that made it, you know, easier. And then it was just getting in there and playing. And that's where everything we've been talking about just pays off, because really you're just comfortable to do it, and just you trust everybody. And that's where those things happen. It's just like, you know, he was behind what we did. Of course, I always think like, well, gee, if I had time to think about this, you know, but it's like, you just don't have to. Mm. And I thought it came off really well. And it's just, you know, that had a big part, I think, of how easy that went for all of us. And then to actually get to play the song the next day at the show, it just kind of set the music that we had been writing at that time anyway. It was kind of like, okay, well, we just should finish the rest of what this record is going to be. And then we should bring James down here. We should just do the next record with him. To me, that kind of solidified it.
I see. Okay, that's fascinating. So you, as the Mesthetics, already had a batch of songs, presumably the one we're here to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I should say that really, because that's in June, and then the recording takes place in November. And you have to understand that before that June was like all of the COVID nonsense. Anthony spent a year away, and a lot of what we had recorded just before then, Brendan lost his studio space. Because it was above a restaurant, and all this COVID nonsense happened with the restaurant. And so anyway, those songs, we were literally going back and going like, where's all that stuff? Like, what does it sound like we were doing? But it really, I think some things came, but then there was just all this other stuff we were writing. But all of it, now all of a sudden, it just couldn't, you know, it just wasn't there without feeling James in the picture. So
interesting. Okay. So it's a little bit circumstantial. And happenstance and luck and fortune and a whole bunch of other words like that. Okay. Brendan, similar question about your impression of playing with James in the studio. And obviously it's led to some amazing things because you're working together now. But can you take us back to that session from your own perspective?
Well, you know, I'm just getting more and more into this idea that you just set up the mics, you get some good sounds going, and then you let what happens in the studio happen.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like to me, like it was, I spent a lot of years trying to like make records perfectly, you know, trying to make the, or you know what I mean? Like kind of, we messed that up, let's fix it. You know, like we have a computer, let's fix that too. Hey, let's fix that, and then we'll fix that, you know, and it's like suddenly you're just like, might as well just, you know, bury it, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like, I mean, it makes for good sounding records, but I've always been like, and there's some of my favorite records that I've ever made, like were made in a day and a half, you know, were made quickly, but with a decent engineer around. So on that session for Fear Not, we were, you know, we were up at Chazad's studio, Figure Eight Studios up in Brooklyn, which is a great studio. I can't remember the engineer's name. It wasn't Chazad, but,
First of all, you're referring to Shahzad Ismaili, I assume?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Just making sure.
Yeah.
There might be another Shahzad. There's only one Vish. We all agree upon that.
Amen.
But there could be other Shahzads. You never know.
Be careful what you wish for.
Be careful what you Vish for, actually. Anyway, I'm
Jesus.
Making dad jokes now. I'm sorry, guys. Please, Brendan, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Ouch. Yeah. Anyways, it's nice. I mean, for me, that losing my studio and abdicating my role as the producer in this band has been really lovely in a lot of ways, because it allows me really just to be like, okay, get somebody who can make, you know, it allows me to put trust in another person and like just get the mics going. Let's get it right. You know, just make it sound good, and then we'll do the music, and then you can just literally
like just let it go, let all that go, and just trust that it's there, trust that it's being captured. But then just I spent so many years where I haven't been able that I haven't been able to do that. And so for me, like with like whatever that engineer's name is up at Figure Eight, he did a great job and the session turned out great. And it gave me a lot of hope for doing another session like that. So when we went into Tonal Park and Tacoma Park with this project, Don Godwin, I'd been recording with Don Godwin all through the COVID. I had done like, you know, probably six or seven sessions with him during COVID. Since I lost my studio, he sort of became my guy. So I was doing a lot of tracking for records, mostly on drums. I produced a couple things in there. So I was really comfortable there. I was like, you know, let's just go there and Don will set it up. And I kind of knew it was going to be easy, that part of it. I wouldn't have to worry about it. And so for me, it's joyful to listen back to it because it feels like a moment in time. It really honestly feels like dialogue happening between the four of us for the first time.
It's fascinating to hear that your whole relationship to the band has changed due to these circumstances. Like, you're not the producer engineer now. You're going to play. And
I'm the drummer. It's awesome. I love it.
I can relate to that. I've been the drummer before. It's fun if you can just be the drummer and not have to book the shows and tell everyone to get going. I miss.
Okay, yeah. I do that stuff.
Brendan can focus on being the drummer, the arranger, the driver of the shows, and do the film stuff.
Okay, so Brendan's still a jack of all trades, so to speak, but at least in the studio he can concentrate. I want to go back to something, James, you were talking about your time at school, and I think also rejecting some of that orthodoxy that I was alluding to. Can you take us back to what prompted that notion of like, something's not right here, this is too limiting or something, I don't like this. Can you explain where that may have come from for you?
Well, I just think that in certain situations, like, first of all, a part of my natural personality is that if everybody is doing this, I'm going to go the other way. And so I think my love for music has always been there, you know, from playing my instruments to learning music by ear, first at church, then private music lessons, then going to performing arts school from fifth grade to 12th. I think that by the time I got to undergrad, you know, there was just a lot going on. I was 19 and first moved away from home, going to Howard, having to figure out life. I mean, it was a lot of other circumstances that didn't really allow me to enjoy, I guess, just being a student. I mean, I had to work, I worked all while I was in school. I played at church on Sundays in D.C. I would say I became disheartened with the notion that when I'm listening to the greats, they all sound different. They all sound different. And then so there's a contradiction in there. You know, the contradiction is, okay, you know, you grow up, find your own voice. You hear people say it all the time, find your own voice, find your own voice, find your own voice. And then when you go away to school, that notion isn't necessarily cultivated. It's through the lens of things being codified and narrowed. You know, this is what music is, this is what it isn't. And so, you know, I'm from Buffalo, you know, we got all kinds of music there. And so, you know, the notion of avant-garde or straight ahead or rock or funk, you know, in Buffalo, it's just sort of like, if people are giving their all to the music, nobody's really caring about the genre. It wasn't until I went away to school that these genres became a thing, like something that I was forced to think about. You know, the music is good, it's good. You know, you have different music festivals in Buffalo and all kinds of bands, all kinds of styles. And just, you know, I felt blessed in that sense. But it was really like the more I started to figure out myself, the more I figured out that, oh, okay, you know, there's certain things that school can't provide. And also, school is not your therapist. You know what I mean? Like, so I was dealing with certain things within my mind just growing up, you know, being a young man, being in D.C., trying to figure out how to eat when school is over with. you know, just growing up, you know, so I was dealing with certain things. And so, but eventually, I will say this, my mom's a school teacher, was a school teacher, retired public school teacher. And then she also worked for the parent affairs for the city of Buffalo. She taught science and math. I never witnessed my mom teaching a subject only one way. She knew how to teach a subject like five different ways. So if you're a student, you have five different, if your instructor is teaching a topic five different ways, you're going to get one of those five. But I feel like in college, that wasn't normally the case. Hmm. You know, it was like, well, this is this, this is this. And so what changed was when school was out, when school was over. And I took 2.5 years. I went out to Colorado. I lived with my, you know, I lived with my dad, you know, who was out there my whole life. And just playing around, and then revisiting these heroes that were never talked about, you know, in my undergrad, you know, like Ornette Coleman, Cecil Taylor, Sun Ra, and just realizing, wow, okay, this is a vibration that feels natural to me. You know, like I want to, as much as I love like a Dexter Gordon, I feel the same way about Frank Lowe, Frank Wright. You know, I feel that same way. So I wanted to learn it all, you know. And so then when I finally went away to CalArts, I went to CalArts because Charlie Hayden was there. That was my primary reason. Charlie Hayden and Wadada Leo Smith. That was my primary reason for going. Yeah. And then to be there, and Joe LaBarber, last drummer to play with Bill Evans, is there, and Alfonso Johnson from Weather Report. And I get to play with these people. And that was one of my first gigs after school was over. It was with Alfonso Johnson. I was playing original Weather Report stuff. You know what I'm saying? So that's when things changed, because that school, and this is not to knock school, but that school is where I felt like I could be an artist. You know, they allowed me to write my own music.
Yeah.
I had to play with all these faculty members. So it was cool. It was cool. And then, like, come on, man, to be around Charlie Hayden and hear all the stories about Ornette all the time. It really just kind of sent me into another vibration. So I respect the full continuum, and every, you know, when I was 19, Howard University gave me discipline. You know, when I think about it now, that was healthy for me. You know, when you're young, you know, things should be rigid to a certain extent. But then once I got grown and went out to grad school, to CalArts, you know, it was open season for me to be who I wanted to be. So, and I think if it wasn't for CalArts, maybe we wouldn't be having this collaboration, because that school exposed me to all kinds of world music and Charlie Hayden. And, you know, I was doing all kinds of gigs. I was playing at the Whiskey A Go-Go with a hip hop band. I was doing everything, because it exposed me to music is music.
Yeah.
It's humanity. It's humanity first. Yeah. It's not like, oh, we got to play it like this. You know, well, I never vibe with that. And I could get nerdy. I mean, Anthony know, these guys know, we can all get nerdy with the music, but when we show up to play a concert, we there to you know, to minister to the people. That's what we're there for. We're not there to, like, well, on this bar we're gonna do this, and no, that's no. Like my grandma say, when you gonna start playing some music that, you know, you know, when the grandma says that, it's like, oh wow, when are you gonna start playing some music? You know, I say, okay, you know. So anyways, that's the short answer, but I could get on this answer all day.
No, that was a lovely and thoughtful answer. I mean, I think we're getting into the realm of discovering that it was really interesting to hear you talk about how we classify success as people finding their own voices. Because most of us, I think, who start in any kind of creative practice, you start out kind of emulating someone. You know, like, I saw someone do this, or I heard this, I'm going to try and do that. But then you gradually, ideally, find your voice, or you figure out your strengths and whatnot. And
right.
And I'm sure we've all discovered in reading about our heroes, they didn't go to school. Some of them didn't even finish high school. And yet, for us, they changed the world. So did you have that experience as well, James, of like, wait a minute, so most of the people who change things didn't actually go down this road of academia?
I mean, of course, you know, you read these biographies and different things like that, you learn. But also, you know, I had the experience, you know, I might have, you know, I've had equipment that my heroes had. And then one day I was like, you know, I don't sound like my heroes, so I might as well get some equipment that works for me.
Yeah.
And not try to like buy equipment that they playing, because I don't play like them.
Yeah.
You know, my oral cavity is different. You know, my fingers are this size or that size. You know, it's like, so I definitely have had plenty of those experiences, but I feel like I went through that progression too, you know, transcribing, you know, getting, copping stuff off of CDs and really, you know, I've been through that, you know, and eventually it just, not that I'm above that, you know, I still listen to music pretty regularly, you know, that inspires me, but I don't limit it to my prospective instrument.
Yeah.
I mean, like, for a good few months, you know, especially during COVID, I was listening to Ahmad Jamal Trio. I was listening to Mal Waldron. You know, I was listening to piano players because I needed some different sounds in my ear than what the saxophone was providing for me all these years. I mean, it's a lot of years. I mean, I listened to saxophone players since I was 9 years old. That's a lot of years of only listening to saxophone.
But you do occasionally compose on piano, right?
I only compose on piano. Matter of fact, I think I've only written two tunes on saxophone. And that thing is the second tune I ever composed on the sax, actually. I don't write from the saxophone. I don't want my stuff to be sounding like... I like to operate in a deficit. That's how I compose. I don't play the piano, right? I'm a composer, but I'm not a piano player. I use the piano because it forces me to be more melodic than technical. You see?
Yep.
So if I start writing from the sax, it's going to be the Olympics.
So the limitation actually leads to advancement in your case. Like your limited knowledge of the instrument actually opens it up to you on some level.
Yeah, this is simplicity, you know? This is simplicity. I mean, if you know, and then, but I will also say, as far as speaking of which, I was thinking about this while everyone was talking, that thing I actually wrote with all these people in mind. Yeah. That I knew me and Anthony was going to vibe on that little riff, you know, like, so I had these kind of things. And then some of the other pieces where we all kind of contributed little pieces. It's like, if you humble yourself and play the music, like play what the music is giving you, it's hard to explain. It's like the music is talking to you. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah.
It's just not like something that's just like, no, James is out to lunch. No, I literally, like, sometimes we're playing these things like, well, wow, this is what the song is telling me it should go, you know, like, so there's plenty of those moments. But yeah.
In line with what you were just saying about heroic figures finding their voice, I've read in the press that people think of you as being this bold new voice in whatever genre they think you're in. And for argument's sake, let's say jazz. Do you feel that way about yourself? Do you feel like you found your voice, the voice you've been, you know, chasing after, so to speak? And also within that, I think of Brendan and Joe in particular as having a unified voice. When they play, I recognize them. On instruments that 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, Anthony is becoming that for me as well. Do you feel like you yourself have established a voice of your own at this point?
Well, I don't know what other people are hearing. Let me just say that. But I do feel that I'm closer. I am closer to what I envision. I don't think it's there yet, but I would feel, I will say that I think the sound, like the sound that I get on the horn has come a long way.
Yeah.
The sound, I wouldn't say, you know, like when you think about a voice, you think about the cadence, different cadences of people's voice. I don't think I've really solidified some other vocabulary things that I'm working on, but I would say like, oh, okay, I can tell when it's me, you know, and I can tell when influences creep in, but I'm getting close. I would say I'm getting close.
Yeah. I appreciate that. What about the others? Do you feel like you're playing with people that have their own distinctive voices in this band? I mean, yeah, let's narrow it down.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, when you listen to the record, and I listen to, say, for instance, Brendan and Joe, that pocket ain't going nowhere. And that's a nice feeling to play with.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very well said.
That you know where the one is.
Yeah.
And having played with Anthony for so long at this point, I definitely know when it's him.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. I mean, I don't know too many people who can play. The few times I've played in different situations, there's a thing I do on the sax, and it's because of Anthony. You know, Anthony plays with pedals, and he's one of the few people, in my opinion, that play with pedals, and they're a part of his voice. It's not like he's playing the pedal, like, and the pedal's taking over. Like, he's in charge of the pedal, you know, and it's a part of his sound. And so there's this thing that I do that's like, I think we played a gig once. And I was like looking at his pedal, and I was like, man, you know, I don't have no pedals, man. You know, I don't have nothing to do. And I developed this, you know, this way of playing where it makes the sax sound backwards. That's from playing with Anthony, because I needed I needed to come up with something.
Right.
You know, I needed to come up with something, a sound or something. And so, but no, I feel fortunate to play. You know, I think I'm old school in that way, that if the bass and the drums, they got to get along, you know.
Yeah.
That's a unified unit, you know. So if they're not getting along, then good luck with the rest of the band, however that's going to sound.
Yeah. I love that every time I'm on a call with Anthony, it ends up being this exclamation of what a challenging force of good Anthony is in the world. He does things that alter everyone else and brings them up. I think that's lovely. I'm mindful of the time, but I want to ask these questions and then I'll let you guys go, because I appreciate this. But Anthony, can you speak to what James was saying about your own interplay in particular, the one you have with him? I'm familiar, and those of us who have followed the aesthetics are becoming familiar with how you play with Brendan and Joe, and I'm going to ask Brendan and Joe the same kind of question about their own interplay. Can you talk about your relationship with playing with James and maybe follow up on what he said about playing with you?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, when we first played and we first met, it was just exciting to hear him play. And being on stage with him, it's, I'm just happy to be there because I'm able to feel comfortable and feel to play. I feel like I'm able to play the way I want to play. It's not like James never tells me what I should do. It's like I'm there to be a collaborator, and I just feel free and open, and the energy just feels like there's no limit there. It can go in any direction. It feels open. We trust each other, and you know, that's the same with Brendan and Joe. We're just able to just open up and have things happen. But I mean, I really enjoy listening back to what I do with James when we're like playing. For instance, if you take That Thing, and when we play the melody together, it's like I'm using this very specific fuzz box called a Zonk machine, which is very rude. And when I hear us playing, it just almost sounds like one instrument. And that just continues to blow my mind. It's I can't explain it, but there's a very good blend between us. And it's a lot, I think a lot of it has to do with just energy and openness. But I mean, you know, it's like early on when we're soloing together or at the same time, or if I'm supporting him, you know, when he's kind of playing linear stuff, I just feel, it just feels welcoming. I don't know how else to describe it. And it's just because, like, you know, going back to what I said in the beginning, it's like, I feel comfortable with him as a person. And,
sometimes, you know, as musicians, you'll be collaborating with someone or playing with them, and you may have the experience of them inspiring you to do something you didn't know you could do. Like, you're like almost like, oh my god, what am I? I didn't think I could do that. Have you ever had that experience playing with James? Or can you even relate to this
with
weird? Maybe I just need to go to the.
Call.
I should probably just go to the doctor. I might have problems. My hands are doing things I don't even know what they're doing. But can you relate to what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And I mean, that's just being in, that comes from being in an environment that's comfortable and being able, feeling like you're able to push yourself to that level. I mean, and that's what, you know, with improvisation, that's my favorite part about it. It's like a constant conversation. The harmony exists second to second. the dynamics exist second to second, the phrasing. I mean, it's just filled with potential and possibility. So when you're approaching it like that, you have the opportunity to leap into those unknown areas. It doesn't happen at all. I mean, it's good when it happens.
Yeah, absolutely. It's special. Speaking of special, Joe and Brendan, you've been playing music together for so, so long. And I feel lucky that you're still doing it and it still sounds magical. I can only imagine how you two feel, but I don't have to imagine because you're both here and I can ask you, Joe, what's it like playing with Brendan in this particular configuration? How's it feeling? Like, do you also, I know you're a modest fellow, but does it feel particularly special to play with Brendan? Like, do you feel like you have this voice together?
Yeah, I mean, I really appreciate the fact that we can play together. When we found out before the very first Mesthetics show, we realized that we played in Fugazi for 15 years and then we did not play live for 15 years. And then we did that first show. And I think I just learned, maybe not very well, but to live with it during that period, I learned how to survive. But I was really happy when I was able to play with him again. Really, I'm very appreciative of the fact that we get to play together. You know you're in a good band when, but it's not like knowing you're in a good band. It's like I'm really happy to play in this band because I really understand what my job is. I really understand what I'm doing here. I'm making a ground, and like James was saying about composing on piano. I really saw what he said as like, that makes sense because it's, you leave yourself the space that you can fill in. You understand the absolute necessity of where the piece is going, but it's wide open and you still have all the room in it. And that's what I've always felt my job was. And it's just, it couldn't sort of feel better than it is feeling these days with these people. So,
well, that's lovely to hear. That's beautifully put. Brendan, similar question about playing with Joe and these guys, but particularly you and Joe. I mean, again, for me, this is extremely meaningful as a fan and at this point, a guy who's friendly with you guys. It just means a lot that you're still doing this.
Yeah.
What's it like to play with Joe?
Well, I think fundamentally, like being together with these guys in practice and playing with them is like there's a bond and there's a joyfulness of being together. We laugh a lot and are still great friends and are getting, and with everybody that you're looking at right now, the more we are all getting closer and closer every day. The Mesthetics was a miserable experience. I wouldn't do it. You know what I mean? So personality wise, we are really, we enjoy each other's company and get along great and go to bat for each other. And I feel like that just the process of being a band is a really lovely thing. And it is same with James in the band. We've had really we talk all the time and have been really gotten closer as the time has gone on. And we're working it out, man. We're working out how to go between these worlds and, and I'm so excited to take it back out on the road. We did go out on the road last year for a couple short tours on the East and West Coast, and that proved that everybody was, it was a blast. Those shows were a blast. And James's trio played as well, which was fantastic. But, playing with Joe, it's like, it's almost like I don't even have to think about it. I mean, he really enables me to play better by being so locked in, so solid on things. He's just like such a great sounding bass player. And so I've always said he creates this like really sturdy jungle gym for everybody to play on, and he enables that, that we all get to, climb around on this really solid, beautiful sounding root. And that goes for me. I play differently with other bass players, with everybody else. In fact, I don't actually play with very many other people because it's not that, because I really enjoy playing with Joe and we just, we played the other night with Lonnie Holly and had a great time doing that. And the more we can take, I really like in some weird way, feel like it's like we really are fused on a musical level
So it's like if I do something like we can communicate with like little teeny volume changes and sounds. Like I hear, we can hear each other playing. So I think that that's a really beautiful thing to have achieved. As you know, as I get to be older, I realize how lucky I've been.
Yeah. Well, again, this is beautiful. I'm glad this union has come together, and for crying out loud, I don't know if this means anything in particular to any of you guys, but I'm happy and proud that you're putting a record out on Impulse. Come on, that is remarkable, isn't it? I'm just like, wow. Like, I obviously, you guys know I love Discord Records, big deal for me, but Impulse, come on, must be a thrill. So I'm just very proud of you. If that, am I allowed to be proud of you? I'm younger. I'm not as smart. Can I be proud? I don't know if that's the right feeling to express, but I feel proud.
It always feels weirdly patronizing when I tell people I'm proud of them, but I appreciate where you're coming from for sure. And I feel really lucky to have been on the two greatest, record labels on the planet. So
yeah. Joe, you're a jazz person. I think you love jazz music. Is it particularly thrilling for you to be on Impulse?
It's pretty wild, yeah. It's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's really just like the cover and just being able to see us that we're like on the label, and it's pretty wild, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't really express it, but it does mean a hell of a lot to me. Alice Coltrane means a lot to me and a lot of the players on that label. So it's pretty wild.
Yeah. Well, I'm just sorry, I don't mean to James, Anthony, happy to be on Impulse, happy to have this record on Impulse?
I mean, the legacy of the label speaks for itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think the record, in my humble opinion, is in line with the boundary pushing of the label.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, listen, like I say, I'm very happy for you. That's better. I shouldn't say I'm proud. It sounds weird. I'm not your dad. I am very happy for all of you. I want to do a quick round of what's next. So we've got this record coming out. I know you guys are going to do some touring together, and then some, I think, sadly, without James as well. So we'll get to where people can learn more about that. But either other projects or the continuation of this one, let's do a rapid fire. Joe, what do you got coming up beyond this, I suppose?
There isn't anything beyond this. I'm just getting ready to go out on the road. I'm working on some things that have, they haven't got any real home yet, but I'm working at it. But otherwise I'm home teaching, and I'm just looking forward to getting out and playing this stuff.
Nice. Yes, you're teaching bass from home, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Is that going well?
Yes. Hanging in there.
Okay. Good. James, any projects or plans that we should know about at this point for yourself?
Yeah, I think speaking of education, I'm going to go up to Boston next Monday to Berkeley. They asked me to come and talk about my creative process and different things like that for the students.
Oh, cool.
And then after that, I'm on the road with Dave Douglas. Got a couple of things with him in Europe. And then after that, some aesthetics. let's go.
That's great. And the Berklee School of Music, that's a prestigious place. Have you been there before?
Yeah, I've been, as a high schooler, we used to compete. They used to have a high school jazz competition.
Oh.
So I've been up there. I've been up there quite a few times, but it'll be nice to bring things full circle.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah. Anthony, what's coming up for you?
I have a handful of other recordings coming out that I've been working on for quite a while. So do you want me to tell you about them? I don't know.
Well, one of the reasons that someone asks another person a question is that they hope they get an answer.
See, I'm still working on this. I don't understand this process. Okay, so
the notion of answering a question that someone asked you don't understand.
You don't really want to know what I'm doing. Come on.
Yes, I do. Okay. I'm
it's promote your shit, right, dude.
April on Otherly Love Records, I have it's a personal record for me. It's a two long form pieces. Side A is a 30 group drone ensemble with Rob Masaryk playing cornet as a featured soloist. And the side B is a long form improvisation with the quintet of Janelle Lapine, my wife, on cello, Jared Gilgar on sax, Luke Stewart on bass, and Jason Nazare on drums and me on guitar. So that's coming out on Otherly Love Records. In June, we have two records coming out, Janelle and Anthony 3, called New Moon in the Evil Age. It's a double record. One LP is instrumental music, one LP is vocal music, Janelle's singing on everything. It's coming out in cuneiform. We worked on that for 12 years, so that's very exciting to wrap it up. The same month, Janelle's releasing her follow-up for Ensemble Volcanic Ash on cuneiform. I'm on that. Then in October, I have a duo record with Jarrett Gilgore coming out. Brendan recorded that. So it's like nice to finish some of these things that have been, you know, been working on for over a decade in some cases. So,
well, I'm glad I dragged that out of you because that sounds exciting. That's good. That's good information. Rob's a friend of mine too. So if you see Rob, please say hello. I haven't talked to him in a couple of years. I think I talked to him for the last record or second. Now, what am I talking about? He's probably put out 5 records since I started the sentence.
Yeah, right.
but I love Rob. That's great. And Anthony, I don't know if you've enjoyed yourself today. You're welcome back. If you want to come talk about those projects, I'd love to have you back. Maybe you and Rob or you and your wife, something like that.
Thank you so much, Al. I would love that.
Okay, sounds good. Is there a catch-all place for people to learn about what you were just talking about, Anthony? A website or something?
No.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad I asked that follow-up. So you yielded an amazing answer. That's good.
As you can.
Some of the labels and everything. So, and your Instagram or something.
You can look at my Instagram or Facebook.
We should put that stuff up on mesthetics.com is what we should do. Just have it up there.
You know? And you can put it, you can even link it on your Mesthetics Bandcamp if you want, all your related projects.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Suddenly I'm the manager of this band and not a good one. I'm sorry, guys. I just wanted to help you promote things. Brendan, what's coming up for you?
I'm going to clarify that James is actually on all the U.S. dates.
Okay, great.
And the European dates. The Vancouver Jazz, he'll be there and Hillside as well. He'll be at Hillside.
Oh, great.
Too.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you going to be at Hillside? Beach?
Well, just so James might not know this. James, I lived in Guelph, where Hillside is, for 20-odd years. So, in fact, I helped modestly. I did what I could to get the Mesthetics to play there the last time they were there. So, Brendan, to answer your question, I'm seriously considering flying what I consider to be home to see you. And I don't want to spoil too much, but there's some great music that I've already heard about that's people coming from all around, and I'm like, if I'm not going this year, when am I going? So, Brendan, I hope so. But okay. It's a flight, and yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I mean, I'm really looking forward to all these shows. We're going out. Mesthetics is at Treefort Festival on March 21st, I think it is. We're at Big Ears Festival on the Saturday, and then we're going around playing Nashville, Atlanta, Asheville, Raleigh, D.C., Philly, and then we go back out again in May. We're playing all over Pittsburgh, all the way out to Minneapolis and back through Canada at that point. And then we're going back up to Canada in the summer and over to Europe in the end of May. We're going to be playing Primavera. We're going to be playing in Paris. So we got a lot of gigs lined up. We're really excited about them. I'm also occasionally out playing bass in the Hammered Halls. And that's about all I got going on. I do a lot of film work. I shoot things and I edit things and I mix things. So,
and he's a roadie for Birthday Girl.
Yes. Birthday Girl DC. Yeah, she's out on the road this week with Mary Timoney, so I'll be the roadie on all that stuff, which will be great. You should come see any of these Mary Timoney shows. Oh, this is not going to be out by Wednesday, but she's playing a lot of gigs over the summer, so just keep an eye out for it. And there's a couple different Birthday Girls, so they're they might be listed as Birthday Girl DC, but her name is Mabel Canty, and check her out.
Maybe I can talk to Mabel. I'll talk to anyone at this point.
Mabel!
not this second.
Literally was right here about two seconds ago.
We can figure it out later. It can't happen now. This call is never going to end. But weird degrees of separation there. If I understand things correctly, Brendan, in Hammered Halls, you're filling in for Mary Timoney on bass. Is that right?
It's a small town, Bish.
Mary was just on my show not that long ago, talking about this great new record, Untame the Tiger. It was a lovely chat. from my perspective. I never know what anyone else thinks, but I thought it was good. So,
She's great. Nice. I can't wait to see her for 5 days in a row. I'm super psyched.
So, Brandon, if people want to learn more about the Mesthetics, where should they go?
I think it's the Mesthetics.com or something. Isn't that it? And, or find That's us it? On Facebook. Yeah, Mesthetics.com or just on Facebook as the Mesthetics.
Okay. I'll link to
or
that.
Instagram as well. We'll give you all those.
I'll do some links. James, I neglected to ask you if people want to follow up with you. I know Anthony said nowhere. Don't go anywhere is what he said if you want to learn more about his work. But what about you?
No, I think Instagram is the best place. I mean, I have a website, but it's not quite up to date. But just Instagram, James Brandon Lewis at Instagram.
Okay, nicely done. All right, I want to go out on a song from this beautiful record you guys made together. And as we're speaking, not out for a little while, but as people are hearing this, it will be out in a matter of days. So if there's a piece we can go out on, I wonder if we can somehow, with this group, pick one by consensus. If there's any kind of debate, we'll resolve it the way we always resolve things, with fisticuffs. But if anyone can, I'm going to actually ask James to pick the song and see what he says. And then we'll, if anyone disagrees, we'll have a short debate. James, can you pick a song from this record for us to go out on?
Yeah, I like Three Sisters.
Three Sisters. Why did that come to mind?
I mean, I just enjoy playing that melody with Anthony. It's cool. It's a vibe. Okay. And it gets a little preachy at the end.
Yeah. Perfect. That's exactly what this show is. That's exactly it. Nice vibe. A little bit preachy. Just a little too preachy by the end. That's how I feel about my own work. Yeah, that's good. Does anybody dispute this notion of going out with Three Sisters? Speak now.
Right on.
Do it.
Let's do it. Okay. All right. From the wonderful and self-titled new album, The Mesthetics and James Brandon Lewis, this is Three Sisters. Brandon, Anthony, James, Joe, thank you so much for this time. I hope you enjoyed yourselves and that we speak. And I hope I get to see you soon. I hope we speak soon. Best of luck in the future. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Vish.
Thank you, Vish. Yeah.
I must say that was a tremendous honor to have Brendan and Joe and Anthony and James on the show, and I hope you enjoyed it. It really meant a lot to me. I enjoyed putting it together for you. And in case you're wondering, this is the 845th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One Podcast Network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. You can also follow me and the show on various internet platforms. Somewhere in the show notes, there should be a hyperlinked thing that says follow Vish online, and that'll guide you towards my Instagram and the Facebook page and Twitter and Threads and Blue Sky, and also lots of options for podcast players and the YouTube channel and all sorts of other things. So head on there to follow me or subscribe to what I do. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation. Keep this podcast going. As you may have heard, this is my primary means of supporting myself and partially supporting my family. So I'm all in right now. And, you know, if the time comes that I have to go back to some sort of day job, I will. You know, I have to do what I have to do. But if you can support the show on Patreon, that would be great. And it's growing. It's grown so much since I really put an emphasis on it. So I can't thank the people who support this show enough, really. I'm trying to. There are perks to joining the Patreon. You get ad-free episodes. You get the episodes earlier than everyone else. You get bonus content. At the right tier, you enter prize draws, monthly prize draws. We give away records and books and all sorts of other things as well. So if you can, like I say, visit patreon.com/creativecontrol and please support this show if you're able to. Thank you so much. Also want to thank the fine independent Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, which has bricks and mortar locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and you can learn more about them at blackbird.ca. Also want to thank independent businesses like Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks to Jim Guthrie, whom you can learn more about at jimguthrie.org. He's a fine, fine musician. And finally, thank you for listening to this episode with The Mesthetics and James Brandon Lewis. I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll check out their wonderful new album and subscribe to this podcast or follow it. Tell your friends all about it, too. That all helps. Listen, I'm going to go now. I'll be back, I hope. I hope you're back with me. Take care of yourself. Talk soon. Bye for now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.